Greg Farrell is the president and CEO of Farrell Wealth and is a registered representative with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. The opinions of Greg and his guests are merely opinions. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
All right, good morning. Show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and president of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm that's local here to Valparaiso in Valparaiso, Indiana, here at 103.1 FM WVLP. We also have a number of clients throughout the nation. So what we do is we talk to a number of different people in different businesses and work with them on their investments and their lives. And why we started this show a couple years ago was really just financial literacy, trying to help you and yours basically save some money and keep some of that money. Nice job, Greg Kovach, our engineer. He just walked in front of the camera there. Just so everybody knows, I know he is. We have a face for radio here at Money Matters with Greg, but we are able to now stream. We are on Facebook, so you can find us at Farrell Wealth Facebook page, and we are able to also answer questions on Twitter at Farrell Wealth. It's F-A-R-R-A-L-L. We spell our name. Unlike the actor Will Ferrell, he spells it miserably wrong. We spell it with two A's, two R's, two L's. So with that being said, we'd like to have guests on this show as often as possible. And we talk the market. We talk a number of different things that have to do with money and to help you with your money overall. And one of the things I wanted to be able to do today was bring on Gary Hartman, who is an intellectual property attorney, and he is owner and with his wife, Dominica, at HartmanGlobal-IP.com. You can find them. And really wanted to talk about why we might let's talk about intellectual property, what exactly it is, help some people out there that might be thinking about starting a business or be thinking about inventions, trademarks, you name it, and how they might be able to save some money and not necessarily spend a bunch of money getting that done, and maybe some ideas about that, but then also sort of walk you through a process that they have that's really fascinating. And he works with some fantastic clients of his and the firms. Overall, they just do some really cool things and some cool stories. So we're really excited to have Gary on. Gary, your mic is on, I believe.
I think so.
You're all good. So thanks for being here. All right, awesome. And let's see, let's just get right into it. We want to be able to mention, just real quick, this show will be on iTunes later after it goes through the rules of compliance. We'll have it up on iTunes and can certainly send it out. It'll also be on the website. We're in the process of putting together a new Money Matters with Greg Facebook page as well as a new website, so that's up and coming and moving on. But you can always find us at WVLP.org. And you can always contact us, too, as well as 219-476-9000, which is the station. Tell me, Gary, so first of all, what does Hartman Global do?
We are, as you said, we're an IP firm, intellectual property firm, and we specialize in IP, which, generally speaking, is patents, trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets, that sort of thing. So much of it is at the business level, at the administration level, as opposed to litigation. We do try to work on the front end of IP as opposed to litigation of IP. So again, patents, trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets. Patents basically cover inventions. You know, the classical idea of what an invention is. Trademarks are essentially anything that you identify your business with. Your products with. So basically anything that you represent to the public as identifying you or your product, that's a trademark. Copyrights, basically anything that you write or artistic, whether it's anybody's own opinion of artistic creation or whether it's your own personal idea of artistic creation. But anything that's basically a work product that is original to you. So, and then trade secrets, of course, are what you might think of, like the Coca-Cola, where you have something you don't want
anybody to know, and you keep it a secret so that you can maintain that as part of your portfolio of assets and your business methods and things like that.
All right, everybody. So, Gary, thank you very much for walking us through exactly what Hartman Global does. Had a little bit of issue with the mic there, so I think we fixed it. We should be good overall with that. So basically what Gary was walking us through was exactly what they do and what trademarks are and some of the things that you want to be able to protect yourself with as a business. As a business owner, you don't necessarily think about these things. You might want to consider it, and that's what you guys do, is walk you through, you know, as a partnership, really, is just trying to help out business owners and making sure that they are doing the right thing. So on this show, we talked a lot about our investments and investing in yourselves. We've had a number of different fitness people on. We've had investing in your wardrobe. We've had people on to talk about how you want to be able to invest in your portfolio of clothes. And then today, we're really talking protection. We talk protection and protecting your investments and your assets. And that's exactly what why we're having Gary on today, is basically let's talk, kind of walking through how do we protect ourselves from the intellectual property that we all know and love, that we are so passionate about, that might be our, as a business owner. So tell us, Gary, intellectual property, real simply, what is it?
Maybe by example is the best way. Let's say you open up a little service store. You provide a service to the public, and on above the door or on the door, you have a name for your business. And what you want is for the community, the world, to know you by your name, so that when they do a Google search, they come up with your name. Because of that name, whatever name you give your business, that is a trademark. And what you don't want is for somebody who's going to compete against you, be in the same locale, be in the same industry, to use that same name, so that instead of when they do a Google searching finding you, they find your competition. So that's an example of a trademark. Patents, you know, inventions are more of a industrial, I hate to say industrial, but you know, again, the more classic idea of you've come up with a new product, you've come up with a way, a new method of making a product. And obviously, you don't want your if you're a small company, you don't want a mega company to come in and just say, oh yeah, we can do that too, and we can do it for less than you can in you know, Valparaiso, Indiana. So the idea there is, well, let's protect it with a patent so that you basically have a monopoly, and others can't copy your invention.
And it's really important to be able to have that. You don't realize as a business owner there are some minute things that you wouldn't even really think are yours and that you've developed, but they are, right? I mean, your name.
Absolutely.
That, you know, for that purpose.
When you came up with your name, you didn't just sit there and come and choose a name in 2 seconds and spend the money with the advertising and the
flyers. Yeah, we got to talk. You know, I got a bunch of names. I got to think about it.
Right. You know, you spend time. You invest your time in coming up with these ideas, whether it's a patent or coming up with the names for you know, or just the material that you provide, let's say, your customers. I mean, you come up with a handy little you know, brochure that explains what you do and explains the industry you're operating in. You know, you've created that. That's not something that somebody else should just be able to come along and say, oh, well, let's just make a copy of that and we'll compete with this guy in a week.
What is the so you do that. Let's say you have a copy and you have the whole booklet or pamphlet or whatever, and it's your process, it's your setup, it's what you do as a firm or as a group or as a company. And then somebody does come along and just basically copy and paste it off your website and then just reproduce it. What are your ramifications in something like that? What is there some way you can kind of claw back that or get them, force them to be able to shut it down? Or
Well, fortunately, in that example, mm-hmm. that's primarily copyrights. Copyrights okay. are automatic, essentially. I mean, it's good to register your copyrights. But, yes, if somebody were to just copy your website, you know, try to maintain the same layout, try to make themselves appear like they are you or affiliated with you.
Right.
You know, that's a copyright issue, trademark issue also. But yes, you can go after them and say, hey, wait a minute. You know, we created this. We own the copyrights to this. You cannot just simply copy what we're doing. You cannot protect the underlying idea, of what you're trying to present. Let's say you're presenting, these are our four-step method of servicing our clients. You can't protect that idea of how you approach your clients, but you can protect, let's say, the brochure that you've created to explain and your approach. And you know, again, those are the sort of things that were more than just a quick thought or a something that you wouldn't want somebody to have a shortcut to get to in order to compete with you at that level.
Okay, excellent. So really, when you talk to the business owners that we talk with on this show and we talk about protection, tell us why do business owners need this protection to be able to basically have a conversation with you, your firm, or anybody out there that's in this line of work? Why is it important to make sure that you're at least having a conversation?
Well, it goes back to the fact that intellectual property is property. And whether you recognize it as such or not, it is. And so, you know, you have a car, you try to protect it, you get insurance, you park it in the garage, you know, you wash it, you know, you try to do things that are going to preserve that car for as long as you can so that if you need to sell it at some point, the value is there. Same thing with intellectual property, and that is, let's say, again, going back to the simple example of opening up a store, a business, and having that name. Well, whether your intent in choosing that name was, oh, this is my trademark, the end result is it is your trademark. And it's a form of property that, let's say, you start up your company and 10 years later, you've got it's a thriving business and you have a large company who wants to come in and buy your company out. Part of what they're buying is going to be that trademark because that trademark has a following. It has a recognition. It has goodwill. It's got a lot of positive things to it, and that's part of the attractiveness of your business. It's not just what you do and your clients, but also your name recognition out there.
I see this on Shark Tank all the time on ABC, and a lot of our listeners listen to it and watch it. I obviously, as an entrepreneur, I love that show. It's a fantastic show. So if you're out there, Shark Tank, we're promoting you today. But want to be able to say, as if you really need it, right? All the billionaires that are on that show and they need a little extra, you know, push. But one of the things they always mention is the trademarks. And do you have the trademarks? They talk to the entrepreneurs and say, do you have the trademarks? How does a business owner, so ultimately they get a trademark, they go through the process and they get it. How do you put a value on some of those things as far as obviously it just depends, right?
It all depends. It all depends on what somebody's willing to pay.
Right.
You know, in the end, some trademarks and IP are going to be inflated and sometimes undervalued. So yeah. It's very difficult. And so, but the thing is you've got to get you've got to identify it as part of your value, part of your assets.
Okay. Yeah, so it is a valuation type thing, right?
I mean, yes, and there are firms out there who will do that. They will do valuations on IP.
Okay, so first step is get trademark. Second step is then, you know, run.
Right.
And be an entrepreneur, be a business owner. But then third is really try to figure out exactly how valuable that trademark is.
Right. Well, the first thing to do is recognize that you have intellectual property as an asset
right.
to your business. And it doesn't matter what kind of business you're in. There are IP implications, and those are assets. And whether those assets are extremely valuable, like the Disney name is that name is so valuable that they are tenacious about protecting
the brand. Yeah, and I'll bet they had their own team of lawyers that yeah.
There are stories about what Disney will do
really
to shut down
Mickey Mouse. Not so nice.
When I was in law school, one of the cases we reviewed was a daycare. Somebody went in and painted Disney characters around the border of the room, and somebody from Disney
really they got a phone call
of it, and they got it. They were sued. They were actually sued, and Disney won because they've got a very very well known product. You know, these characters are all. Valuable products to them. The name Disney is valuable to them. And unless they protect that tenaciously, that value can erode. So they're very good about realizing the value of simply their name and ensuring that nothing is going to tarnish that.
And then the definition of the brand, right? I mean, right. If someone can draw a Mickey Mouse stick figure on a wall and try to pawn it off as Mickey Mouse, there's an issue.
And there was another great case where there was a parody of Mickey Mouse, and I remember my law professor saying that, you know, it all depends on the sense of humor of the judges, because you know, parody is one of those things where, yes, if you've got a business and you've got a name and somebody, you know, sort of does a little play in town and they're picking at you and they're playing around with your name, you know, that's a parody. That's supposed to be allowable to some degree. Your competitors should not be, you know, messing with your name. But if it's for entertainment, there's some leeway there.
Right.
But again, that may not be. It all depends on the judge's sense of humor.
Well, and we're going to get into some really cool stories here later in the hour. But the show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth, and we're here at 103.1 FM WVLP. We're talking with Gary Hartman from Hartman Global, talking about intellectual property and his firm, what they do. And it's fun. It's a fun conversation. We're going to get some really good examples as to how the industry works and just some of the cool stories that you guys do at Hartman Global. If you want to find them, they're at HartmanGlobal-LP.com, or IP, sorry, intellectual property. So HartmanGlobal-IP.com, check them out. And that's where you can find them. We're on iTunes. You can find us at Money Matters with Greg on iTunes. Certainly this show will be uploaded very quickly. You can also listen to us stream live. And any of the other shows at WVLP are fantastic at WVLP.org. Some really, really a great lineup of shows, all the way from the two kinds of music out there, country and western, all the way to punk rock and you name it. It's a community radio station. It's a nonprofit. It's a 501c3, we'd like to promote it as much as possible because it's great for our community and the people around us here in Valparaiso, Indiana. That's where we're located, we're broadcasting worldwide on the web. And it's just growing, even though it's a little old radio station here in Valpo. We're doing some great things. One of the great things we're doing today is having Gary Hartman on to talk about intellectual property. So we're all about money on this show, trying to save some people money and try to whittle things down. Tell us, if someone were to, all right, you know what, I've got something, I really need to be able to talk to somebody about a number of different things, maybe it might be a number of patents or a couple different trademarks, a couple different copyrights, whatever it might be. Tell us how one gets ready to have a meeting with you so they don't waste your time and waste their money going into the meeting.
Well, the first thing is to be ready to tell your story. I mean, an attorney should be able to sit there and want you to talk, because I find that when I'm with a new client, a good portion of the time is just them telling background, telling them the story. You get a sense of what is important to them, but then be prepared to explain everything that you're involved in. I mean, you know, what's going on with the company? Where is your market? Who's working on this? Who's working on that? You know, what sort of things are you developing and creating? Because all of those things are potential, you know, IP. And you know, once the attorney has a good picture of what and an accurate picture of what you're doing, then he or she can sit down and start figuring out how to protect that.
So they go. They basically just tell your story. Walk in, tell your story. Tell us about your business. It's more of a business analysis in some way, isn't it? I mean, it's
right.
We're looking
for the bits that we can protect in some way.
Right.
Exactly right. And I should also add that, you know, when you do go and sit down with the attorney, whether you ever pay that attorney a dime, whether you ever see that attorney again, you already have attorney-client privilege. So when you sit down and you talk to that attorney, you don't want to hold back. I don't want to find out, you know, 6 months later that one of your ex-employees ran off with some information and you knew about it, but you didn't do anything about it. And now we're trying to repair the damage 6 months later.
Because it would lessen any sort of trademark or copyright, right?
It just complicates things. Because if you are aware, let's say you've got a small company and you have a good reputable name, and for one example would be you know, architectural designs for mm-hmm. homes. If you become aware that somebody is building homes based off of your house designs, mm-hmm. you know, don't wait 6 months or a year or 2 years to do something about it. Because once that person's entrenched in what they're doing, the more they're going to try to fight it. You know, so it's much more, it's much better to be proactive, realizing there are issues and trying to deal with them up front, because it's low, it'll cost less in the end. Cost less in the end if you're trying to head things off before they get too far down the road.
That first initial meeting, I don't know how it is in your industry. With us, I mean, first initial meeting, we start talking about money and investments and where you might want to go, and we talk, you know, a lot of our process. That's free. So, like, that's just how we roll, you know, in our industry. It difficult, you know, if it's more about relationship because we work together so often. You know, with you guys, probably it might be a little bit different because if, you know, it'd be a relationship, of course, but maybe I only need one patent or one trademark, and it's a transactional type thing, and then I move on, that sort of thing. I don't know how necessarily if you guys do that or
yeah,
not.
Yeah,
you know?
That occurs, yeah.
You know, but basically walking in, you know, is that first conversation typically that sort of that overview, that client privilege, is that something that it's not going to cost me a lot of money to be able to have that conversation with you?
We have our first consultation for free.
Okay.
Because we do find that IP is one of those areas where so few of the general public certainly are aware of all the aspects. And if you're afraid to come in and start talking about it, okay, again, 6 months, a year later when you do come in and things are a mess, okay, now it becomes more costly for the client, becomes more involved for us. So we'd rather have people come in at least to get that quick education. I mean, they may come in and realize I have nothing. I don't have anything to protect.
Right.
I'm sort of on my own because
don't
I'm just
waste the money.
Some, yeah.
Right, exactly. So it's really, really great. Okay, so everybody out there that's looking at, you know, thinking about doing this or having this, or, you know, I run a business and wow, I listened to the show and I hadn't thought of that. That sort of thing. You know, don't be scared. You get the attorney-client privilege immediately, so you can have a conversation and be open and not have to worry about hiding anything, right? And then, you know, initially, most people out there, I would assume in the industry, are going to have a conversation with you and sort of walk you through as to whether you have something of value or not, and sort of steer you the right way. You want to be able to have somebody that's trustworthy, but don't be afraid, right? I mean, just.
Right.
Go for it. You know, you should probably talk about it because, you know, you might be unprotected, and that's the whole point.
Right. And a good example of that is this was, you know, some years ago, but a guy came to me. He was working for a company. He was an engineer, and he said that he wanted to leave the company and start his own company. But he was concerned about he had an employee contract. He was concerned about, okay, what does my employee contract say that I can or can't do? I have some ideas that I want to start working on. What are the ramifications of me having been an engineer for that company, starting my own company? So he sat down and we covered the gamut. And because he came in and was completely honest about his situation and his plans and the history with the company, we were able to essentially avoid any issues with his past employer. And he was able to get a good start, and the business is thriving today because he didn't try to just leave the company and start on his own and not be aware of, okay, there are trade secret implications. You know, there are you know, invention implications. There's employee contract implications. So he did it the right way. He came in, explained the situation. We were able to send some letters, clarify we will do this, we won't do this. The employer was satisfied with what we said, and he was able to move forward.
That's interesting because, you know, and I'm all for people going out, branching out, starting their own business, and, you know, being an entrepreneur and taking that risk. Certainly, I've been.
And those are classic examples of success. Where,
yeah, that's excellent. That's really, really great. And protecting. You know, question just immediately comes up as a business owner, though. You know, basically, this engineer's had an ability to be able to do something in a process and learn and then come up with the ideas on his own because he's working in the business. You know, is there any sort of thing that basically says, look, we're paying you a wage, we're paying you a salary that says, you know, the only reason you were able to do this over here and have that idea is because,
and that's,
you see what
exactly
I mean? So
right.
What happens there?
Well, if you're an engineer for a company, part of the presumed role that you play is creating technology, which includes inventions. So while you're an employee of that company has rights to what you create. So in that situation, what you try to do is either ensure that you can't just strip your mind of everything you've learned.
Right.
I mean, that's impossible. So we all recognize that once you leave and you start working for another company or start your own company, you're going to have things in your head that are going to be able to be useful in your next job. What companies don't want you to do is take information that you could not have gotten anywhere else, client lists,
right.
Knowledge about trade secrets, knowledge about things that they're working on that for a new product coming up. You can't take that with you because that does belong to the company. But the knowledge that you've learned in your industry, now you can take that to a new company or a new employee or a new employer and then utilize that to now create new things. So you got to be really careful with that line of what you create based off of what you learned before and what you create based off the general knowledge that you have because of that relationship.
Yeah, fascinating. We're with Gary Hartman here from Hartman Global, -IP.com. You can certainly look him up and talk. We're going to another half an hour or so. We're going to take a break here and just get a sip of coffee and then start over. But fascinating conversation here as we talk about intellectual property, you and your business, trademarks, copyrights, you name it, all your processes. We're going to get into the weeds on a couple Supreme Court decisions that have been out and about we want to be able to talk about coming up here. And how that has affected the intellectual property world in just a second. But the show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth, a wealth management firm here locally in Valpo, and then also servicing clients nationwide. You can find us here at WVLP.org and stream. Farrellwealth.com as well is also streaming. And then all the social media outlets, we're on Twitter and Facebook and you name it. So that's where we are. And for right now, we're in Valparaiso, Indiana. And in just a couple minutes, we'll be right back. Thanks much.
Money, 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 money. From that money machine, now you can better your man. Your children to try. You can't bring your enemies to their knees. With the impossible exception of the North, you get the beast. You take the strong kid from the money machine.
From that money machine.
Sell on top of the world. Strong kid from the money machine.
From that money machine.
Sell on top of the world. Motors, IBM, Alphabell, CIO, Dollar King, man. When I began the game, see me singing about the fire and rain. Let me just say it again. I've seen fives and I've seen tens. It was a strong hit.
All right, thank you, James Taylor. I really appreciate that. Actually, James Taylor was involved trying to get some of the royalties from a number of his different songs that he was not getting paid on. So it's fascinating in the music industry just how little and how much some of the artists actually get paid for their intellectual property. And that's what we're talking here today with Gary Hartman from Hartman Global and talking about intellectual property and some of the things that are out there on the show. The show's Money Matters with Greg. We talk money here. We try to talk about some of the things that might actually help you throughout your lives, save you some money along the way, invest your money wisely, and make sure you protect yourselves. And that's exactly what we're talking about today is protection of your business, protection of your ideas, your thoughts, and a number of different things. And that also actually includes your methods. You know, it's interesting how it's changed in the Supreme Court rulings from years ago, but I want to ask you about ask Gary about the business methods that you have. You know, at one time they were patentable, and then several years ago, and that was a big game changer, I'm sure, and kept a lot of patent attorneys gainfully employed. because now it wasn't just Disney and Mickey Mouse and you know, signs and those sorts of things, and it wasn't copy. Now you could actually patent your business method. Talk to us about the evolution of that philosophy and how that's sort of changed and is changing today.
Well, patents and the protection of inventions actually is in the U.S. Constitution, and the wording in the Constitution is such that it seems to be rather open-ended. And so, you know, naturally, as technology evolves, so does the what is believed to be protectable with patents. And during the 90s, during, you know, the internet explosion, there were a lot of things that were done, whether it was you know, on websites, you know, the double-click kind of thing to order things, or the ability of computers to assist people in running their business, sort of, you know, like finances. I mean, if you come up with a clever algorithm by which you can select a stock that you believe is going to be a value, it's going to increase, and then you give that information to your clients. You keep your methodology to yourself, but you share the results with your client. And, you know, those are things that are products of the mind. I mean, those are creative. Those are intellectual property in a very real sense. But the question is, are those things necessarily protected by patents? Does that necessarily fall under the umbrella that was intended for patents to protect? And as things go with the law, things evolve. And in the last couple of years, there was a court case, Alice v. CLS Bank, that's the case that most people might have heard from one time or another. But
is that, and what is that? How does that
Well, it essentially, what it did was curtail the explosion of patents that were being issued for what we call business methods. And, you know, the example I'm going to use is the creation of an algorithm by which you can select certain stocks that appear to be going to do well, and you come up with this clever way of doing
not that
it.
We would ever do that, and certainly don't need to want to say that as a disclaimer for compliance, right? But it's a great example. I love it. So.
But you know, and that's the one that you know, actually has been addressed by, you know, by the court. So
sure.
So again, if it's a very clever thing to be able to come up with a way of trying to analytically, objectively, predict certain things, and then be able to provide that service to your clients. And if you can get a patent on that, that's great, because now your competition can't do that. Well, and that was all fine, and patents were issued on things very similar to that. But there was tension out there, because, you know, you have certain individuals or businesses who are very much, we came up with this, we got a patent. Now we're going to enforce this patent against some really big names out there. And, well, of course, if you're being sued, you're going to push back. And so what happened was, there was the pushback, and it eventually ended up in the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court said, wait a minute, you guys, this has gone too far. Things that can be done in the mind, things that can be done manually by hand, like an algorithm, okay, you can sit down and you can do those numbers on a piece of paper. Yeah, it's much simpler to use a computer, but if there's a way of saying that, yes, this thing could have been done on paper with a pen, then that shouldn't be a patent, because that is not the art, the arts, as we would say, that was intended to be protected by patents.
So is the business method philosophy or being able to ensure your business method? I mean, you know, every business has their own methods. I mean, the IBMs, the Googles, the Apples, they're all, and at one time they were ensuring those things. Now, has it shifted as far as the landscape being able to continue to do that, or is it more difficult?
The IP should not drive technology. Technology should drive
the IP.
The IP.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So, you know, if you come up with a way of providing a better service for your clients, mm-hmm. well, then you're going to do it because it's better, and it's better for your clients, and it's better for
sure.
for your business, whether or not you can get a patent on that. So in the end, you know, hopefully anybody listening to this will realize that, no, I don't do what I do so I can get a patent, because that's not your first priority in your business.
Right.
It was a nice thing when they were issuing patents for that sort of thing, because then, you know, Alice could go out and sue and try to create a monopoly for themselves. But in the end, it's still intellectual property, but maybe you might want to look at it more as a trade secret where, okay, this is a service we provide our customers, mm-hmm. and we're not going to tell anybody how we do it, but it's a winner. I mean, we are consistent predicting, you know, the markets or that sort of thing.
Right.
So it has taken some of the bite out of, and some of the gameplay out of certain industries.
Yeah.
It definitely has, and it's still evolving. So I can't say that, and I know that it's not over with yet, because the Supreme Court comes out with decisions, and then the Federal Circuit in D.C. is the conduit through which most IP cases end up before they go to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And so the Federal Circuit is always trying to figure out, okay, is this what the Supreme Court means? They explained it up here. We're dealing with the, you know, changing facts. How do we implement these decisions? So it's evolving as we speak.
Yeah. It's just fascinating stuff. Some of the things that I'm fascinated by just in talking with you, are just some of the examples or the guidance you give through people on the technology or how things sway. You made a really good comment off air here talking about how your business moves and ebbs and flows. It really doesn't – you can't wake up on January 1st and say, you know what, our business is going to start getting into this industry or that industry, because you're sort of you follow what the clients have. If a client comes to you with a certain industry – well, then you sort of go that route, right? I mean, ultimately, isn't that sort of the case with, you know, technology-wise? As far as if someone comes to you with an app or an invention, then you sort of go with ensuring protecting that invention, right?
Right. And that's it. Technology has really turned IP upside down. Business methods, that was the computer and the internet and that sort of thing.
Sure.
Music industry with video and audio and being able to put things on YouTube, the music industry is upside down. Apps for iPhones, I mean, that's a great example of something that industry did not exist 20 years ago. So the issue is that we're always adapting. We're always trying to chase and stay up with the issues that occur because of the evolving technology. And that it is a challenge because we're trying to interpret laws that were written in the 50s or 70s or 80s or 90s or whatever. But you know we have Congress writing these federal laws, and by the time it's signed off by the president, you know, the technology has changed already.
Yeah, yeah, so, isn't that amazing? Yeah,
so we're always chasing it. So that's why we're always reacting too. I can never sit at my desk on January 1st and say, well, this is what we're going to work on this year.
Right. Well, because what a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
Your life changes all the time based on, your clients.
Right. We're constantly responding to what the clients are doing, what the technology is doing, what the courts are doing.
Yeah. That's excellent. That's really cool. We're going to get into some stories with Gary Hartman here from Hartman Global in a second. But one of the things I wanted to be able to kind of pass on and sort of help you as you go to look to interview a patent attorney or an IP attorney, some of the things that Gary would recommend you ask overall. Obviously, one of those things would be, what do you work with? Do you work with just copyrights? Do you work with just trade secrets? Those sorts of things. And you want to talk about their background. What is your background? What's your firm's background? We kind of went over that already with Gary already. But one of the questions is, are you registered with the USPTO? And what exactly is that?
Okay. The USPTO is the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. To practice patent law, to be able to get patents for clients, you need to be registered with the USPTO. And to be registered, you not only need to be an attorney, licensed in a state, but you also have to have a certain undergrad degree. And predominantly those are engineering degrees, but there are the hard sciences of chemistry and physics and things like that. So in order for me to get a patent for a client, I have to register with the Patent and Trademark Office in order to do that.
Yeah, and with any legitimate business, they should be registered and worthy. Obviously, in the financial services industry, you know, we have more regulation now than we've ever had. You know, and as far as registration and licensing and everything else, so you want to be able to make sure you have when you are interviewing that someone that is registered and is legit.
And I can add to that 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 for the registration with the USPTO is a patent law thing. It's not trademarks, it's not copyrights. And there are very good trademark and copyright attorneys out there who don't have any any specialization in their undergrad degree in order to practice in that area. It's just that they've specialized in that area.
I see.
So, but the key is, what is their background? If you're talking inventions, then yes, they need to be registered with the USPTO in order to actually represent you in front of the patent office to get patents. If it is copyrights and trademarks, those are really specialized areas, and I would highly advise that you seek out somebody who does that primarily for a living, as opposed to somebody who does, divorces and wills and we do trademarks too.
On the side, right? Estate planning and then, a couple patents. One of the things that, and I'll just ask you this as far as how important along those lines, one of the recommendations that you hear out there is as far as patent heavy districts. Have you litigated in patent heavy districts? Have you been around those sorts of things? Obviously, this is really important for Silicon Valley. You have, let's say, East Texas now with Austin being Delaware would be another overall. But is it that important to have an IP attorney that basically is located in a place that is just working on technology in a technology area like Silicon Valley?
Not really. We've dealt with, in fact, we were in a case a couple of years ago where it was in the Eastern District of Texas, and that is the mecca for a lot of patent litigation because the court has made it very accessible. They've tried to become specialized in that area. So, and depending on whether they are favorable toward patents or unfavorable, they're definitely litigation. They seek to try to find litigation in certain venues. But in the IP, the patent law and IP industry among attorneys, we work with each other quite a bit. I mean, if you look at a court case, it's not unusual that there are attorneys from various different law firms actually representing each, the plaintiff and the defendant, because there are certain, you may have a litigation firm handling the litigation, but you might have a special, somebody who specializes in, they're a patent attorney, let's say, in that industry, in that technology. They're familiar with the technology. They wrote the patent, let's say. They may be involved, they're likely to be involved in that also. So we end up actually working with firms that are going to handle litigation in those venues as opposed to necessarily ourselves need to be there ourselves.
And I just would assume with technology and much of what we do in our business is all through webinars and conversations. We have so many more things nowadays. I don't have to necessarily get on a plane to go talk with a client in Arizona. We can meet, talk about portfolio management and a number of different other things through, an iPad while that client's like flying through an airport. I mean, it's very, very simple. So,
and it's a good
analogy.
You can
do the same sort of thing, right?
I mean, right. We literally have clients and all over the country and in various places in the world. Yeah. And we have agents because I can only practice law in the U.S.
Right.
I'm registered with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, not with the European Patent Office. So we have agents that we work with. So you don't need to go to somebody in D.C. to get a patent. You don't need to work with a firm located in any particular area where the industry largely is. There are a number of large numbers of firms in New York, in D.C., in Detroit, where those you know, they have specialties and they are able to, they're familiar with the courts and whatever. But when it comes to the front end, and again, I'll go back to the front end idea about protecting your what you're doing. It's better to work with somebody that you can work with and have a comfortable relationship with, and they're accessible. So we've got a client in Fairbanks, Alaska right now. We haven't met them. We haven't met them in person yet, but we have some expertise in their technology, and it's been a great relationship.
I highly recommend you go. I think go there in July.
Yeah, they're still waiting for a little more daylight up there.
Exactly. So, yeah. No, the fly fishing world that I love to live in and don't live in enough. Alaska is a beautiful place. Been there a number of times. I highly recommend you go, but I tell you, there is July, August is perfect. Okay. I wouldn't want to be going right now. You know, that's certainly. But one of the things, back to the international side. So does one need to sort of follow up and pursue that international protection as well, or is that just sort of a give or take?
That's another great question, because it really depends on what you're doing, what your market is. If you get a U.S. patent, that patent will protect – that patent essentially prevents others from making, using, selling, offering for sale your invention here in the U.S. Well, if 90% of your sales are going to be in the U.S.
Canada or wherever, yeah.
Yeah, then why do you want to get a patent in China?
Right.
Because in China, yeah, they can make it. If you only have a U.S. patent, yeah, they can make it in China, but they can't sell here in the U.S. If your market is the U.S., then let the Chinese sell your invention in the Philippines. Don't spend the money, because intellectual property in other countries could be very expensive.
And almost impossible at times, because some of those countries aren't going to really care.
Right. We have a client that their industry is in, you know, basically it addresses air pollution. And they made a foray into China, and it just hasn't worked out. I mean, they've pulled back because it's just not – it to enforce their IP there – is difficult. So they look at the market here in the U.S. and Canada and realize, no, our bread and butter here is here in the U.S., and we're only going to be very selective in what other countries that they go into.
One of the things that I just think that's fascinating, I just want to follow up on that. That just seems unreal. As a business owner, you make a decision to go into another country to go get more sales, to go get more revenue, and then you find out that basically you're being infringed upon because they're stealing it from you, you know, and there's just not much recourse. So you make the executive decision to be able to say, all right, you know, it's not worth it. I'm going to back up.
Right,
that's just amazing.
And the business decision is the exact word. I mean, this is all about business decisions. I mean,
right.
How much money are you willing to invest in protecting yourself in the markets that you want to be protected in? And those are, it's nice to have a plaque on the wall saying, you know, Greg Farrell has a patent, yay. But if that patent isn't making you money, then
right.
It's not a good investment.
It's more of an ego thing.
Right,
just
right.
Sexy than anything else.
Yeah.
Along those lines, there is such thing in the world that you live in as patent trolls, people that kind of follow or prey on. You know, they're non-practicing entities. They don't practice.
Right.
But sort of like the dot-comers and buying a web domain and not really caring about it. They just want to be paid for it.
Right.
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 So how do you go against those sort of offenders and the licensing fees and whatnot that you can try to protect yourselves against patent trolls?
It is difficult because it became a little bit of a wild west there. Again, there are so many patents out there. In fact, I should say that the number of patents being issued is increasing. It's I wouldn't say exponential necessarily, but people think that you know, there aren't that many patents being issued these days. There are not as many inventions, so it's quite the opposite. So you have a lot of patents out there, and you have companies that scour through the patents, and it could be, you know, something that somebody got a patent on. They're working in their own garage in Utah. They got a patent, but they don't have the wherewithal to get anything to the market. And somebody comes along and says, "Hey, you know, that patent probably could be interpreted to cover a lot of different things, and the patent was issued before these other things caught on. We can buy that patent and enforce it against a number of other corporations and make a ton of money."
Because all people work in honesty and good morals and right? I mean, they would. People would never do that, right? I mean,
I'm maybe yes, they do. Maybe yes, they do.
Maybe somewhere out there. Isn't that amazing? Just you really. I mean, just as a business owner, there's so many things you have to be thinking about, and not only on the accounting side and the compliance side, the payroll side. Of things as far as making sure your business is running. You know, the entrepreneurs out there are working 80 to 90 hours so they don't have to work 40 a week. And I just think it's amazing. That's why we want to be able to have Gary on the show, just to talk about some of the things you can do to help you protect yourselves from all this hard work you've been going out there and doing, all the business owners we have on this show and that I know out there are working so hard. I just would hate for them to have something come around where their business is wrecked, their business is affected, their lives are affected, their families are affected, or whatever, just because they didn't necessarily talk to the right person. And you can talk to Gary and his entire crew at HartmanGlobal-IP.com. Certainly just contact them without a doubt. In the last, 5-6 minutes here as we drive this home, Gary, is there sort of like a recommendation if you have, I know we talked about a lot of different things as far as what to do early on, walking into an IP lawyer meeting, what you need to have with you, telling your story, and making sure that you give all the specifics, all the descriptions, all the details, knowing that you have attorney-client privilege in those conversations. So along those lines, is there anything you'd say to the young budding entrepreneur that's going to start a new app or a new company or whatever? Where would you recommend to start with some advice towards those types of people?
Well, aside from trying to sit down and figure out exactly what you have, what your goals are, and speaking to an attorney, there are resources out there. And we have some great resources here in Northwest Indiana. And I want to do a call out here. There's a Commercialization and Manufacturing Excellence Center that's affiliated with Purdue University Northwest. Mont Hanley is the director. And for those of you who are fans of Shark Tank, he was on Shark Tank. And Mark Cuban invested in his company. And we like to say that, we were with Mont 20-some years ago when he got his first patent. And we're prosecuting his current patent right now for pit moss. He is the director of that, and they are an excellent resource. You can go contact them, they're located in Hammond. But they're a resource for entrepreneurs who can sit down, who want to sit down and just talk to somebody about, what do I do? This is all new to me. What do I do? Another resource here, and it's a resource across the country. It's the Small Business Development Centers. And they are located across the country in every state. Our taxes are what fund it. So basically they're not there to make money off of you. They're there to promote entrepreneurship in the locales. And so we have the Northwest ISBDC here in Indiana, located in Crown Point. Excellent resource if you're looking for guidance, because I can provide you guidance on IP. But I'm not a marketing expert. I'm not a sales expert. I'm not one who can, financing. How are you going to finance your business? These groups are. And so you definitely want to be careful who you reach out to. Don't watch the Inventech kind of commercials on television and think that those are the easy way to get protection and to get money off your invention. Being an entrepreneur is a lot of hard work, and there are resources out there for you, but in the end, don't expect somebody else to just hand over a bunch of cash to you and say, what a great idea, thank you, we'll pay you every month for the rest of your life. That doesn't happen.
Well, and you need help and guidance, right?
Right.
And these are organizations that you give, and we'll put these on the website as well. To make sure that you have a chance to be able to find them, but you can Google them as well. These are organizations that they're either nonprofit or they're basically for you. They're not getting paid in a certain way where they basically make money off of you and your ideas, right?
Right. If you focus in on businesses that are affiliated with your community, not with a corporation owned by certain people, but because they are, again, they're there to try to promote industry and entrepreneurship in their locales, because hey, if you start up a business and you end up employing 5 people, that's 5 people that didn't have a job before. Or whether you bring them in from another area or somebody locally, you're providing jobs. That's what these businesses, that's what they want, and that's their motivation. They're not making money off of you. They're hoping that their locale, their region, their state will make tax money because you've started a new company.
That's excellent. The show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and president of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm here local in Valpo, but then servicing clients throughout the nation. And we're talking with Gary Hartman here from Hartman Global about how you can protect yourselves and your intellectual property that you're out there on the front lines as an entrepreneur or a business owner, or maybe you're an employee and you've got a really great idea and you want to be able to go out and branch out and do your own thing, start your own thing, start your own company and your small business. These are all things that you want to be able to make sure you listen in on and just sort of protect yourself. We've had a number of different things go through here. Obviously, it's a ton of information from Gary, and I want to thank him certainly for being here and being part of the show. Anything, you know, that last recommendation that you want to leave the listeners with out there, Gary, you know, floor is yours.
Just be proactive. You know, always consider what it is you're doing and the possibility that if your competitors had this information, they could more easily compete against you. If there's anything like that, then yeah, you want to try to figure out how you can protect it. So being proactive at the very beginning and looking forward is much better and far, far less expensive than litigating later on.
So you're going to save yourself some money if you're just thinking ahead here, thinking about the process or whatever it might be, but be proactive and think about how you can improve.
And the nice thing is that you may just get a green light from the attorney saying, yeah, you've done everything, you're in good shape, you know, you really don't have, there's nothing that we need to do, there's not a lot of money we need to spend right now. That may be the case, but until you get the good diagnosis from the doctor,
right,
you know, don't assume that everything's fine.
You know, just real quick, and we didn't really talk about fees. I mean, what would if you were just a basic, simple patent, I'd just get it done. Is there a range where people can get something like that?
It does depend because you and with our firm, when you contact us, we send a fee sheet out for estimates, but there are very simple inventions that we can describe in 15, 20 pages and five sheets of drawings, and there are inventions that are 40 or 60 pages and 20 figures to explain. Or the trademarks. It could be that if you're coming up with a name, it may be a very involved research into trying to make sure that you're not conflicting with somebody else's trademark. So it does vary, but it's not a small investment. You're looking for a patent. You're easily looking at $10,000. In the first few years. It's not all up front, but certainly in the first year or so, you can expect fees like that.
But
so it is an investment.
Yeah, an investment, absolutely, and that's what we talk about on the show. It's great, and it's an investment in your future and your business to make sure that you're not going to necessarily have to spend $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 in litigation and everything else
right.
if somebody tries to steal your idea.
Right.
It's fantastic. Gary Hartman, thanks for being on the show.
You're very
excellent,
welcome.
Excellent,
I enjoyed it.
Great job, and you can find Gary and his entire team, his wonderful wife, Dominica, at HartmanGlobal-IP.com, and contact them. There's a number of different companies that they've worked with. They're also on the website as well. It's just fascinating stuff. So hopefully we were able to be some sort of help to you today out there. You're going to get this podcast on iTunes just by searching Money Matters with Greg on iTunes. We'll get it up and about, but there's also about 80 other episodes up there if you want to go check us out. And you're driving home, coming home from work, or on your way, you can certainly listen to us and sort of pick up some more tips. And certainly hope this was some sort of help here. Gary Hartman talking about trademarks and copyright, intellectual property here on Money Matters with Greg. WVLP 103.1 FM. I want to wish everybody a fantastic week, and we'll catch you next week. Thanks again.
Greg Farrell is the president, CEO of Farrell Wealth, and is a registered representative with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. The opinions of Greg and his guests are merely opinions. All individuals should get their proper advice investing and managing their personal finances. Money.